Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. In a message directly from the City of Kingston, the Kinsmen Club of Kingston has donated $100,000 in support of the Inclusive Play Project. Over the past year, a significant number of community volunteers have worked tirelessly to raise funds towards the goal of building Kingston's first fully inclusive and accessible playground. The Inclusive Playground was approved by City Council to be built on the site of Shannon Park. With the generous donation from Kinsmen Club of Kingston, the Inclusive Play Project has raised close to $600,000 and continues to work alongside city staff to apply for grants and pursue donations, sponsorships, and naming rights opportunities. The cost of the region's fully inclusive playground is expected to be approximately $1.5 million. In a statement from the Kinsmen Club of Kingston, they state, quote, "Our club believes that every child should be able to experience the joys of childhood. And what greater childhood joy than going to the park? The Inclusive Play Project is an important step toward ensuring that all children in this community will have access to that joy, and we couldn't be happier to help realize that," end quote. More information about supporting the project with corporate sponsorship, in-kind donations, and financial donations can be found on the Inclusive Play Project website. Once again, that was a message directly from the City of Kingston providing an update on the Inclusive Play Project. In another message directly from the city has announced Extend a Family Kingston as the recipient of the 2025 Kingston Community Climate Action Fund for its Growability Hydroponic Greenhouse Project. This initiative aims to address the city's climate action goals while fostering sustainability, inclusivity, and local food security in the community. The Growability Hydroponic Greenhouse Project will upgrade and scale the operations of two hydroponic greenhouses that are capable of producing over 20,000 heads of fresh, locally grown produce each year. Previously, Extend a Family Kingston was a Climate Action Fund participant in 2020 to 2021, installing its first Dunya hydroponic greenhouse unit. By utilizing hydroponic technology, the project will use 90% less water than traditional farming, eliminating the need for soil, avoiding greenhouse gas emissions from transportation, and increasing climate resiliency by sustainably producing local food year-round. The Climate Action Fund fundraising goal for this project is $30,000. Fundraising will take place from December 2024 through March 2025, and 100% of the funds raised will go to the Extend a Family project. Ian Cholmoldley, Extend a Family, Kingston's Program Manager of Innovation, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, states, quote, "Extend a Family Kingston is excited to grow this project through the KCCAF, producing food locally and sustainably to support those in need while increasing the climate resiliency of our community. By supporting Growability, you're not only helping to address food security and environmental goals, but also supporting an inclusive program that enriches lives and strengthens our community." Now in its fifth year, the Climate Action Fund continues to support innovative local initiatives that drive climate action and foster community engagement. Thanks to the partnership with KCCU and the generosity of the Kingston community, 100% of donations will directly support the Growability project. Julie Salter-Kean, manager of climate leadership at the City of Kingston, states, quote, "We're thrilled to work with Extend a Family Kingston once again on this transformative initiative. The Growability Hydroponic Greenhouse Project demonstrates the incredible potential for climate action projects to address environmental challenges, and the positive impact it will have on our community cannot be understated," end quote. Donations can be made at all KCCU branches, where contributions will be matched by up to $5,000, as well as online and at the City of Kingston Payment Center. Tax receipts will be distributed for donations of $20, and the city will match up public donations to $15,000. Join us in supporting this year's KCCF recipient. Together, let's grow a greener Kingston. Once again, that was a message directly from the City of Kingston on this year's Kingston Community Climate Action Fund recipient. The Boards of Health for Kingston, Frontenac, and Lennox and Addington Public Health, Hastings Prince Edward Island Public Health, and Leeds Grenville and Lanark District Health Unit have unanimously voted to merge and form the Southeast Health Unit. The new health unit will cover a nearly 20,000 square kilometer area and serve more than 550,000 residents. The merging of various local public health agencies throughout Ontario is the first of three pillars of the province's initiative to strengthen public health, The Southeast Health Unit is one of the four merger groups officially forming in Ontario. The province is covering 100% of the costs associated with the mergers. Dr. Peter Oglaza, Kingston's current medical officer of health, will hold the same title for the Southeast Health Unit. Dr. Oglaza discussed the merger with CFRC.
This is a volunteer process, so it took a lot of discussions and even at the very beginning, we were even discussing what's the best configuration. I think that's a really important point because we need to, the ministry set some parameters in terms of what that new entity should look like. So one of the parameters was the size of the new entity should have the catchment area serving approximately 500,000 people. And this is what we meet and slightly exceed for this proposed merger. So it's a sufficient size to increase capacity to provide more surge capacity, provide a good service across the region, but also not too big that it becomes less manageable. I think that's a really good balance between the size and all the benefits from the economies of scale that comes from larger entities.
Thank you for speaking to maintaining that balance, because I was also going to ask, this is still a really big region. How will the unique challenges of each community still be accounted for?
The important point to consider is that the local public health presence will be maintained in the community. So we are under one large organizational umbrella, but the work done through our staff working directly on the ground with the communities, that will continue. Mm-hmm. So if there were public health inspectors visiting local businesses, restaurants in, let's say, the city of Belleville or Hastings County, however they have their area where they were providing services and doing the work. Well, that work will still continue. It will be under the umbrella of the Southeast Health Unit, but the people and that local interaction will staff to community will remain the same. And I think that's an important element, is that that local infrastructure through which we provide services in our currently three separate health units will still be in place.
What kind of changes may we start seeing in January 2025?
I think the main changes that we will see is probably not as visible to the general public. Although, yes, there'll be new name, there will be new legal entity. But at the beginning, starting in early January, we'll probably still have three separate websites. So that's going to be a longer process to bring that all together and merge that fully on that user interface. But the governance structure, the board will be new, the name will be new. But in terms of operations, we will take the time to plan it thoughtfully, how to then merge the operations between the three organizations. And this is not something we're going to rush. And that is really the intent behind that, is to make sure that local connection and the work and all the advantages of all the strengths of local public health units individually are maintained and brought into that new entity, and then we in addition benefit from that economies of scale aspect, but without compromising that local connection. I think that's really key, and that if there's anything that I want to people to take back from this discussion is that local connection will remain.
The costs associated are being covered by the Ministry of Health. What exactly are the costs associated with this process?
So there's a multi-year budget for year one, for our grouping. It's just a little over 10.8 million, and that's a significant figure. But it does include a lot of different items that go towards that budget. And that's something that's the key advantage of this voluntary merger initiative by the province, is that these are significant costs, and there are additional funding that's brought by the province. These are not the costs that municipalities have to bear. So I think that was a very, very significant improvement compared to previous, perhaps previous discussions about mergers. Remember, we had a 2019 discussion about the mergers where it would be a completely different map, looking at a different number of 10 health units across the province, and some of the boundaries didn't quite make sense based on the local connections that we have in the communities, and there was no additional money for that. So this is a very, very significant departure from that that previous concept, and one that's really very much welcomed by us in the field, by our partners.
Dr. Oglaza stated that there will be more front-facing changes in the health system when the other two aspects of the Strengthening Public Health Initiative come into effect: the revision of interior public health standards and the funding formula review. For now, Ontarians should expect the same service or better.
I really hope that this will provide some reassurance to our communities about what this merger will bring, and that they can expect the services will either remain the same or improve. That's the guiding principle behind this merger. And if there's any changes to our services, which there might be some in the future, there will likely be as a result of other two pillars of the Strengthening of Public Health Initiatives. That's where we talk about the Ontario Public Health Standards, which is the element that defines all the work that we do. There might be changes in nature of our work and what we do based on that process. So that's something to keep in mind as well. But as a result of the merger, we don't anticipate significant changes or disruptions. We're planning to make it better. There might be some things that remain the same. We're hoping that a lot of the types or way we do work will be better.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hello, Kingston. I'm Isabella Garrido, your CFRC sports reporter, and you're tuned in to the CFRC Sports Desk, your go-to spot for all the latest in Queen's University athletics. We've got a lot to cover, so let's dive right into some exciting upcoming games and recent highlights from our Gales. First up, women's hockey. The Queen's Gales are back in action after a strong finish to their first half of the 2024-25 season. Gales earned a solid 4-2 victory over the York Lions just before our winter break. Despite some weather delays forcing a late arrival, the team came out strong and never looked back, with goals from Sophie Hudson, Karis Colley, Allison Reeves, and a late empty netter from Taya Leonard. Hudson, who was instrumental in this win, contributed a goal and two assists before leaving the ice in pain after blocking a shot. Her status in the upcoming game remains uncertain, but Gales are looking to keep the momentum going. Gales will return to the Memorial Center on January 3rd to take on the Concordia Stingers. Puck drop is at 7:30 p.m., so be sure to mark your calendars and show your support as the team looks to continue their winning ways into the new year. Moving over to men's hockey, the Gales have been red hot recently, jumping to number 4 in the U Sports Top 10 rankings. Closed out the first half of the season with back-to-back wins over UQTR and Waterloo, both by a score of 3-2. Queens enters the winter break in second place in the OUA East Division with an impressive 15-3-00 record. January 10th, those Gales will be facing the Nipissing Lakers at the Memorial Center with a puck drop at 7 p.m. A win here could be a huge step towards maintaining their position in the standings, so don't miss it. Turning now to women's basketball, the Queen's Gales are gearing up for a big matchup on January 10th against the Laurentian Voyagers. This game will be held at the Arc, and with a strong performance so far this season, the Gales are looking to continue their push towards the playoffs. Tip-off is at 6 p.m. and it's sure to be an exciting game. As for the women's volleyball team, they have climbed to number 3 in the U Sports rankings after sweeping the Toronto Varsity Blues in straight sets this past weekend. Their solid 11-1 record has them sitting atop at the OUA standings, and they'll be looking to carry that momentum into the second half of the season when they resume play in January. That's all for now on the Queen's Gales, but don't forget, whether it's hockey, basketball, or volleyball, there's always something exciting happening at Queen's. Make sure to come out and support your teams in 2025. This has been Isabella Garrido with your CFRC Sports Desk. Now back to Christina Laurie with your weather report for this evening. Stay tuned.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, December 11th, a high of 4 degrees with a 60% chance of precipitation turning into a 40% chance for snow overnight as temperatures drop to the minus 5 region. Thursday, December 12th, chilliest day of the week here in the city of Kingston. We've got a daytime high of minus 5 with a 40% chance of flurries dropping down to minus 11 overnight. Friday, December 13th, staying consistent with that minus 4, minus 5 daytime high, dropping down to minus 7 overnight. Saturday, December 14th, we have a daytime high of minus 1 with a 40% chance of flurries throughout the day, dropping a single degree to minus 2 overnight. Sunday, December 15th, ending off the week with a daytime high of 1 degree, so around that freezing mark, and a 60% chance of flurries. And then as we move into the start of next week, Monday, December 16th, we're going to see a high of around 5 degrees, and that will stay consistent into the next day as Tuesday, December 17th, we have a projected high of 8 degrees. So some unseasonably warm weather after this period of wet and chilly weather. And that's a wrap for your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. This is Jesse Bell with the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week of Monday, December 9th, 2024. Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 to Middle is closed to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 and St. Lawrence Avenue. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed until December 31st to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Colborne Street, Barrie to Main is closed December 9th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. for servicing works. Collins Bay Road, CN Rail Crossing to Bath is closed December 9th from 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. for the installation of a gas main. Collingwood Street, Earl to Union is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th is closed for buried infrastructure replacement. The road will be open to local traffic. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick is closed to accommodate water main replacement. Union Street, Willingdon to Albert is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And University Avenue, Union to Earl is closed for construction related to the Queen's J-Duck project. Here are some other delays to keep an eye on. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles and Edwin to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes Phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay Active Transportation Improvements. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. Gardner's Road at Centennial to Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. And lastly, Sir John A. McDonald at Elmwood, expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection. And that wraps up your City of Kingston traffic report for the week of December 9th, 2024.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a song from local artist Kakao's third album, Quantum Entanglement, released on November 29th. Quantum Entanglement is inspired by the cosmic placement of the soul in the universe, connected as one with a newly sober mind fueling the creation process. The album channels the focus of intent and inspiration of spirituality in raising the vibrational state of self and awareness in the connection of souls with quantum entanglement theories. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via Visit Kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Quantum Entanglement on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it entitled Affinity here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a song from local band The Codas' new EP, Live at the Isabel. This newest release from The Codas is a perfect example of what makes this group so endearing, displaying their lush harmonies, mesmerizing live energy, and intimate arrangements in this live performance at the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts. The Codas have managed to capture a brutally honest performance filled with raw emotion. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via Visit Kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream The Codas live at the Isabel on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called In My Blood, here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Get my name.